Good evening, lovelies. Welcome to another episode of Coffee, Candy, and Creatives. My creative tonight is David Del Rio. David is an actor, producer, and director. His film, Roadhead, is available now on Amazon Prime. You may know David from shows such as The Troop or movies like Pitch Perfect and The Belko Experiment. He's funny, he's clever, and he is also a mentor, working with his alma mater and helping recent graduates. So grab your cup of coffee or your favorite beverage, cuddle up with your host, Pup, sit back, maybe get a little roadhead, and enjoy the show.
I was thinking this was the way to go, and you put up your puppet show. I say cheers to life. No, I'll be no good man. Why?
Just leave me alone.
Good. How are you?
Good. I'm sorry I'm late. I'm having issues.
Oh, it's no problem. Can you hear me okay? Or is any of my background noise distracting?
No, you're crystal clear. You're crystal clear.
Okay, cool. I'm in the lobby of a hotel at the moment, or not the lobby, but just like in the lounge area and stuff. So you might hear some commotion in background stuff. So I apologize if it like messes with the podcast sound or whatever.
Fine. So you're traveling?
Currently I'm in a very quick directing gig here in New York. So I'm directing what they, you know, I don't know if you know, but like demo reels, you know, where like just has clips for actors to act in. My alma mater does demo reels for the graduates, kids who are graduating. So I'm directing 28 students. And so the format is just like an assembly line of just 35 minutes a scene. But I'm shooting with a great production company that's making these demo reels look really professional and look really nice. And the kids are having a lot of fun, so.
Right, and it's a good step for them to have that in their portfolio.
It is. It is. It's a great tool to have, just kind of like not having to, you know, just say you're an actor, but just kind of like prove or just show and let that performance and that clip do the pitch, you know? So, you know, it's a great thing for the school to do for the kids, considering that they've trained the last 2 years for acting on film and TV. And it's nice to kind of go back to my alma mater and hear these kids speak like I used to speak about acting and in the industry and so hungry and ready to go. And so it's a nice blast from the past.
Does it make you feel ancient?
It's funny because now I kind of understand how people read me so well when I was young, you know, and I always used to think that I'm like, how did you gain this knowledge or whatever? But then after being in the industry for 13 years now, you see it. It's like so clear, and it's not even anything bad. It's just like, oh, I know what's going on in your head right now, you know? And it's just so strange. It is strange.
Well, 13 years is tricky because it can seem like forever, but it also can seem blink of the eye. So I feel like 13 years, you're still relating to these graduates because you know exactly how you felt at that point. And
100%.
What they're looking forward to. So I feel like you probably bring some really fresh eyes to it, some experience.
It's always nice to direct also while kind of giving advice and teaching in that way, you know, because you kind of learn a lot about yourself as well when you teach, you know, and you're like, okay, that's a load of shit what you're saying, or, you know, easier said than done, you know?
Right.
And I always kind of make sure that I kind of let that, you know, be known that what I say, the complete opposite can be true, because there is no rule book. And also, you know, a lot of the things that I say is easier said than done. Like the things that I kind of tell them to kind of like get over, I said, I'm still not over that. So let me just tell you that either be okay with it, it's never going to go away, or just take it from me, it's not a route you want to be in terms of mentality and stuff like that.
Right. I do as I say, not as I do.
Oh yeah. 100%. 100%. In a lot of ways. So yeah. And where are you based now?
I'm in Florida now.
Okay.
Over on the Space Coast, over by like Kennedy Space Center and all that.
Oh, okay, cool. You go. I'm from Miami. So, I haven't been there in a while, but actually, I don't know why I said that. That was there 3 months ago, but yeah, I went to Jensen Beach for the first time. You ever been? Mm-hmm. What a quaint, lovely town. I've never been there, and it was just so nice.
There's a lot of Florida that I haven't experienced yet, and someone will mention something, and I'll be like, oh, where's that at? Or like, oh. Okay.
Yeah, I've never driven up to Jupiter around there, and it's kind of like about 40 minutes before Jupiter.
Based in LA?
I don't want to say, you know, we're gypsies right now, so we're not really based anywhere. When I shot a show in Puerto Rico 2 years ago, we packed up our stuff from North Hollywood, and our stuff has been in public storage, and we've been living out of our suitcases ever since. But we have a house being built right now in Austin, Texas. So I guess I'm saying I'm going to be based in Austin, Texas.
Cool. Well, isn't that a pleasurable benefit of what you do? You can do it much from anywhere.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, we were kind of scared at first, you know, in terms of like if our travels were going to affect my wife and I's work in the industry. But 2020 has been very nice to us. We've been very lucky. I did an episode of The Good Doctor in Vancouver, and I got the job while we were in Guadalajara, Mexico. Because we just decided August 2020 that we weren't, you know, if we were going to quarantine, we were going to quarantine in a place that we could sort of be inspired and have some beach therapy. So we were in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico for about a month and a half, and then while we were in Guadalajara, we booked that job and they kind of just flew us there. And so there is a big benefit, especially in where the industry has kind of headed now, which is auditioning through Zoom and all that stuff. Yeah,
because of quarantine and all that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And there is a little bit of a disconnect of kind of, you know, when they have chemistry reads, when they're basing your chemistry off of a split screen in Zoom, it is very tough, but it's been working out so far. So we've been very lucky up to this point.
And if you have to be in quarantine, why not go to a place where you're surrounded by beauty that prompts your creativity in general? I mean,
I mean, that's what we were thinking. That's what we were thinking. Just a place to be creatively inspired. And North Hollywood wasn't doing it for us at the moment. So we decided to kind of, you know, find a place where the sunset was a painting every night. And, you know, every sort of afternoon when my wife, Katie, and I were done with work, we just take a dip in the ocean and eat and go back and be inspired.
Right. How beautiful.
Yeah, it was fun.
I've not ever been to Mexico. It's one place that I've wanted to go to. They have, I always say it wrong. Is it cenote? Cenota?
Cenote. No, cenote, yeah.
Caves where you underneath. Because I am a little claustrophobic, but I feel like I could get past it just for the beauty of it for like maybe 5 minutes and then I'd have to get out. But it's just, Mexico is definitely one place that I've always wanted to go.
Yeah, you know, by the time we got there, we felt that, you know, the people there were still taking the pandemic very seriously. But then also it was such a tourist market, a heavy tourist market, where there are also some places where they pretended that they did not know that the pandemic was happening. So come on in and let's have fun and, you know, buy this and touch this and, you know, kind of being very laxed with their, you know, thing. But we got to see another side of the world that was kind of going through the pandemic, and also a good split of people who were doing it right and trying to save their family and save their people around them from being responsible. And then there were other people that were just like, pandemic, what? No, come on in, you know, that kind of thing. I didn't know there was a pandemic going on, you know? And so that was a really interesting balance. But we really decided that we were, you know, you have to take responsibility when you're going to make a decision like be away from the United States for a long time. And so Catherine and I kind of really said, you know, let's go get inspired, but get inspired really, really responsibly, because eventually we do have to come back to the States and face our friends and family. And we took that very, very seriously. Considering how much we traveled in 2020, you know, we consider ourselves very, very lucky.
It's sad. Commerce outweighs common sense, especially with a pandemic. Sadly.
Yeah, it is true. I mean, it's true. You know, it shines a light on people going through survival mode. You know what I mean? And sometimes from the highest order of the highest hierarchy, or however you want to say it, to the person selling fruit on the street, you get to really understand and see the difference between greed and the difference between greed and survival. And you kind of really get in a sad, you know, sort of get in a sad outlook of, wow, this is real life. You know, survival is exactly what we see in the movies, and so are villains, you know, and so is greed. And so is, you know, this really has kind of given out a true face of the human condition for a lot of people. And one can just only hope that people are opening their eyes and listening and taking accountability. And at the end of the day, just trying to help one another survive. Once this thing is done and passed, what I do hope is for people to understand what they've learned, to come together to beat something. And at the end of the road, we don't separate as if we had not known each other, but to come together and see and fight the next sort of collective environmental energy together. And I just hope, and part of that is kind of just looking in the mirror and kind of going, what did I do to contribute to the better of the world and the worst of it? And you know, even if you are on the right side of history, how you get to the right side of history is a huge reflection on yourself. And I think that, and I just hope people kind of look in the mirror, and myself included. So.
It's so crazy, and not to get like on any tangent, and nothing political, but it's sure. Crazy to me that something, this is a big deal. COVID, this pandemic is a big deal. I understand not, you know, 100% of people are going to bind together for a common good, but I can't believe that there's so much divisiveness still about it. It's like, this doesn't care what color, creed, sexuality, political affiliation, it doesn't care. Why can we not all agree on this one thing, that this is a big deal? That's what's been so crazy to me. Why are we fighting about this? I don't know. It makes no sense to me.
It kind of did show about how control mattered to so many people. Losing control is a scary thing. I mean, even it is for me as well. You know, I would call my dad sometimes and let him know how kind of sad I am in terms of, not to make, again, like you said, not to kind of trail in a very, you know, deep conversation. However, I guess podcasts kind of bring something out of you to kind of really dig deep. I would call my dad and I would express, wow, like I've never been so affected and sad when I'm reading what's going on in the world and what is okay and what people are allowing and all that stuff. And kind of what gets you through the day, my dad would say, is the only thing you can control is your world. And then the world around you will be, you know, reflected back in what you give it. And you know, what I see is when people, sometimes seeing people really fighting to be right other than to be truthful is what gets people crazy. And I think the brave ones are out there are the ones who are not afraid to be wrong for the sake of self-discovery and for the sake of getting people to change, you know, and change is scary no matter which way you look at it and whether you're on the right or wrong side of history. But change, you've always changed, you know what I mean? That's what people don't understand. You've always changed from where we're talking right now to when we're done speaking. We are going to be changed one way or another. But people are afraid of that. People are afraid to step up and say that I'm wrong and then don't realize, wow, do you see how much weight that took off your shoulders just when you say you're wrong? And do you see any life sentence for you? Do you see any pain? Do you feel any pain? Or does it whisk away like a moment? And people are kind of afraid to even move towards that, you know? And so I think that's what gets people a little crazy, you know, when they're just afraid of being wrong.
I think you're onto something with that, because I think there are two things. People that cannot be wrong, no matter what. People that will argue to the death something.
It's a lonely place. It's a lonely place.
And you're right. If you say, oh, my bad, I was wrong, you're not going to get punched in the face. I mean, maybe. But you're not thrown in jail for saying, oh, I was wrong, I should have worn my mask, or oh, I was wrong, you know, blah, blah, blah. And also, there's people that are contrary just for the sake of being contrary, that will fight just for the sake of fighting. Because that's their gig. That's wrong.
And that's the other thing too, right? Where our clench for control also, I think, means that people are also afraid to put in the due diligence of research, right? So I try my best, really try my best. Sometimes I fail, and actually maybe, you know, most of the time I fail, but I really try my best to kind of not speak unless I really, really know about the conversation, or I really, really, really know about the subject. But then other than that, I just ask questions. You know what I mean? That's the other thing that people are afraid to do, asking questions. So again, you know, we live in a world where we constantly want to show people where we are, how we are, always putting pressure on ourselves to always show our best selves constantly. And so people don't want to let go of that.
And some people just have to be seen as better than other people.
Have to. They just have to. and that's a real lonely place. I get to go to sleep better when, you know, I say, well, you know, I don't know about this. What research have you done to kind of really stand your ground on a subject? And I make my basis, and by the way, I make my response and make my attitude and point of view of what I hear in a non-judgmental manner, you know, whether I feel like they're right or wrong. Everybody has a right to their own opinion. And that's another thing where people get in trouble, where it's like, you know, your opinion must be mine. And that's not what this country's built on. That's for sure.
that. I don't think that's how human nature is built on.
That's true. Yeah.
If we were all one mind, we would be like the Borg. We would. I wish I had a dollar for every time I've had to say agree to disagree about things, because I'm just like you're saying, I am way. If I am positive about something, I'll fight to the near death about it. But no, for sure, I'll say, oh, okay, well, maybe you're right. And I'm going to research it, or I'll look into that. Thanks for pointing that out to me. Because I never want to be that person that's like, I'm right, and you can lay down and die. So I would rather educate myself if I'm not completely sure about something.
And there is something fun about you and I taking out our phones and using it in an informative manner, where I'm not just in my corner looking at my feed, which is catered to me, by the way, you know, because it is. It's just catered. It's not the worldwide view, you know. And sometimes it's fun for you and I to pull our phones out and go, I'll tell you what I read, and you tell me what we read, and let's read it so we can have a conversation, right? And let's give our intelligence due diligence in the way of our limited intelligence the due diligence to kind of sit down and talk and figure it out and say, that's interesting, and that's something that I agree with and disagree with. And then we continue to have our coffee and go throughout our day. I love having tough conversations with people that I love, because, you know, it's a clear line of when someone crosses the line, which is when someone's like attacking your character or attacking you personally because of what you believe. And I think, you know, I think, that can really be solved if, you know, we just kind of put all our resources out on the table and then read to each other out loud of the different information that we're getting. I think that would be a nice little bridge connector.
Right. It's like this big puzzle of knowledge that everybody can bring their little bits to. And hey, this piece this might not be correct, so we're gonna set this aside and talk about that later.
Totally.
I like that.
I can definitely vibe with that for sure.
And I'm also really good about not beating not beating a dead horse, because like if I'm in a conversation. I actually had a conversation with my father a couple of weeks ago to where I just kind of went, you know, just kind of and okay. Because he wasn't convinced. He wasn't going to be convinced. In my head, I'm thinking, in those milliseconds, I'm thinking, I'm continue to fight about this with him, because my or my dad, he's years old, you know, I'm not going to go at him with a battering ram to try to convince him that my point of view is correct. I'm just not.
You know, and that's the other thing too, to find the balance, right? The you know, we're not on this earth to change people, you know, and we're not, our job is not to change minds. I think what our responsibility is when we see ideologies or when we see perspective and perceptions go out and hurt other people, that's when we kind of need to step in. But if it's an exchange of ideas, that's all it is, an exchange of ideas. And so to keep the peace in the world, there is a limit to letting people live, because you got to let people live. And when you let people live, then you allow yourself to live, and everybody's in harmony. Because I could be in very harsh disagreement with somebody, but it kind of takes something, it kind of takes it to the next level when you know that the belief has hurt people. And so that's when you kind of maybe need to kind of step in, and then also have the time to maybe disconnect yourself, you know, as well, to protect yourself in that way. So it really is a chess match, is exactly what you said, where you really do decide how much you're going to push and then how much you are going to pull. And that's a really good balance compared to pushing, because that can really cause pain in a big way.
Right. And it's also funny, because to an extent, when it comes to the elderly population, a lot of times their mindset, their beliefs are so deeply rooted that you could literally bang your head against a brick wall and get further than trying to convince them of your point. And it was so upsetting to me because I was so excited to tell him about this interview that I had done, because he's a real Civil War. He loves the Civil War and all the things. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God, guess who I talked to? Yada, 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 blah, 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 blah. And he's like, well, that sounds stupid. Like, I think this is a great idea. And he was just like, well, in 1863, and I said, and I went in my head, I said, you're not going to change his mind. So I was like, I said, so what are you and mom doing this weekend? what are you going to do?
Yeah.
He's Spanish. He's stubborn. He's set in his ways. And I just had to back it up a little bit. And in a situation like that, I found what for me, because I still want to talk about it because I'm still excited about it. I'll call somebody who will also be excited and be on the same wavelength with me, because that way you get your vomitus of information out to someone who's appreciated it and be like, that's so fucking cool.
Yeah. That's yeah.
But it's, again,
he's got your dad's got the three S's too, by the way. He's got the set, the stubborn, but what is most important out of the three S's is that he's Spanish. And so that is out of all those, Spanish is the
heart. Senor.
That's right. That's right.
I just lost all my non-Spanish speaking listeners. He's set in his ways, and he's from Spain. He's from Barcelona. So.
Oh wow.
But yeah. So going back to real, I want to go on the record as saying I love wearing a mask. I will wear a mask when COVID is over because I don't have to do my makeup. And muttering just for making spaces when they're being retarded. You know, it's like
right
underneath my mask. Just yeah. Everybody needs to be careful. And here in.
Right.
You're from Miami.
I am born and raised in Miami. From a Colombian and Cuban family. And so the joke I always say is that I have the Coke and the cigars in my family. So it's a great mix. But you know, I grew up with a very festive, very close knit, bonded family, and still do. But this time you have the next generation of children, you know, which is just really wild. And me and my cousins, you know, growing up in Miami, my cousins were my besties, as well as, you know, high school friends, but really we were very, very close and are very, very close. And yeah, you know, I loved kind of living in Miami as well, because it wasn't as disconnected from the arts that I wanted to be a part of, which I really did appreciate. You know, the industry is very model and commercial and music video heavy. Not exactly the place to kind of sort of thrive in coming into working in the industry. But it did provide the good training and as well resources for kids in my age back then to really figure out a way how to make a film and, you know, act in it and stuff. And so I did appreciate my training over in Miami as well.
Well, Miami, you said with the modeling and the music video, unfortunately, it feels like maybe that can lead down a darker path than in regards to like drugs or heavy drinking or things like that, just because of the type of environment. And I'm not making a judgment call on it, but it just seems like that scene might not be as helpful for a younger actor just starting out as it would maybe theater or commercials or, you know, a television pilot or things like that.
Miami definitely has a really actually as a real good theater community, I think. You know, in the Coconut Grove Playhouse, and also they just opened not a convention center. I keep forgetting what those are called, but like an auditorium. Like, you know how every downtown has, well, it's almost like it actually is like a theater space, but it's like, you know, that it's that they bring tours of Broadway shows as well as they do. Okay. You know, as well as they do like music, operas and concerts and, you know, that kind of thing. So they have a real active theater community. But I also think it's just as much kind of, you can get yourself in a deep dark hole in New York and LA or Atlanta or even in Vancouver. And, you know, I think it's really just what you make of it. I think
it might be a big city thing then.
Maybe, you know, I think that it really is what you make of it. If you are in a music video or you are in a commercial, you know, you figure out a way to kind of squeeze the juice of that marketing and squeeze the juice of that exposure as much as you can. But it all comes back to, are you a good employee as opposed to a good artist? And it comes back to, are you using your last project to thrive onto your next one? And, you know, if you make it about the work and not about yourself, you know, you can kind of have an easier gauge through the industry, I believe. And, you know, but like I said, I think, you know, based on where you are mentally and based on, you know, how your outlook on the work, you could be more than tempted to go down a dark hole anywhere you are, especially in this industry, you know.
Right. Well, talent without the work ethic is almost pointless, I feel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with that. And there are other people who fall into this industry that have that thing, you know, that I don't know, James Dean, or, you know, that sort of feel of kind of like, well, I don't care, whatever, and but they still bring out a raw, you know, performance, there's beauty in that too, I think. One can only live their life in the frame. And yes, that's kind of dangerous because you got to have a life, you know, and you got to separate the two. But, you know, once you kind of find that treasure there a little bit, it's really fascinating to watch and really fascinating to be. Not always the easiest to work with, but it is about the frame, you know, it is about the take. It is about what happens in the scene. As long as people are not getting hurt, you know, you find a way to kind of push and hone into someone's life that they're bringing on to the set. But I do agree with you. I do think where it's like, it's still a job. It's also still, you know, you still have a boss. You still have to clock in and you still have to clock out. And, you know, not everybody in the crew is being nice and catering to you because they like you. They do it because they have a kid to feed. And so, you know, and they have a kid to feed, and they have to get home to at a certain time. And, you know, you can make the job easier for everybody by not being so difficult. But I do agree with that it's not only talent without the work ethic. But, you know, sometimes there is a little bit of a rawness there that you kind of want to hone in a little bit and use for your film or your television. But I can understand that. I wouldn't be able to hire someone and just be like, yeah, but they're so talented. You know, we got to keep him or her. I think there's a balance between the two.
Well, and here's the other thing. Just because, we'll say Bob Smith, just because Bob Smith has the look, he's got the perfect hair, he's got that voice, girls tuning over, but he's a dick. He shows up late every day. He throws a tantrum. Water doesn't have three ice cubes. You know, he's just a complete douche worker. But guess what? There's five other Bob Smiths out in the waiting room. There's five other Bob Smiths, you know, out there passing around their demo reels. So this Bob Smith, you might think that you got it going on and that nobody's going to replace you. But now there's so much, there's so many people out there trying to make it or trying to, be an actor or be a singer or what.
I also like where the industry is headed in terms of accountability of how you treat others. You know, that just because you're in the movie industry doesn't, you know, like the secrets are out, you know, mm-hmm. The secrets are coming out about how people are treating other people on set. And, you know, I think that's this is a very important step for our industry.
And not just that, it's producers, it's
no, directors. Right.
Everyone. Beautiful.
Yeah. And so I think, making people accountable for how they do business is a positive thing that I think that's happening into the industry where, you know, like, you know, Olivia Wilde, a talent, I've never had the pleasure of meeting her, but like a talent that I very much respect, you know, has a no asshole policy. And that's really, you know, like I said, there's a balance between a good work ethic and that raw talent that someone kind of needs to emulate themselves or, you know, put themselves in a certain position in order for them to do their job, but also really respect the people who are taking the time to trying to make you look good. Because I know that for me as an actor, that's a very hard job to do, you know. So you know, I do, you know, kind of respect, but I do like the no asshole, you know, policy feel, you know. And by the way, it's like people have their bad days. You know what I mean? It's not a quest for perfection. It's not even a quest for making sure everybody is just nice. But I think there's just, don't bring your bullshit to the field, you know, because all that matters is that your team on the field and I'm going to do a stupid sports analogy and I don't even watch sports, but like, it's all about scoring the goal together, you know. It's all, and also it's about the project, and you know, the project is of most importance, the story is of most importance, but there's a balance of where, how to carry yourself and collaborate with others, you know.
Exactly. And it's okay, going back to one point you said, everybody has a bad moment or a bad day. That happens, and it might take you a minute, it might take you an hour, it could be the next day at work. If you go to people and you say, listen, I know I was a total shithead yesterday. I had a flat tire on the way in. My kid was throwing a temper tantrum. My ex-husband was being a d-hole, whatever. Or you can even say, I don't know what was wrong with me.
Mm-hmm.
I had a really bad day. I should not have snapped at you. I shouldn't have done whatever. If you come back with accountability and an apology, it goes a long way. But if you're just like, ah, fuck it, it happened, whatever. Oh, well, they'll have to live with it. Then you're a d-hole. But
yeah.
And as to the teamwork thing, someone was telling me, they were at the store and there were two lines and the one cashier was just chewing the other cashier's ass out. And well, not like that, but she was chewing her out in front of customers. And my comment was, whoa, wait a minute. You guys are coworkers. You work together for the company. If your beef should be against the company you work for, if you have to have beef, never against each other. Because at the end of the day, you guys are a team. And I don't understand in a workplace where people don't like each other. I understand that there's different types of personalities, but you literally, like you said, it's the end goal. It's scoring the goal. It's getting the project done. I've never quite understood why people have to have drama in the workplace fighting like that. And especially on a movie set, because you can tell me the slightest thing will set back, cost money, which pisses the producers off and the money people and goes on. And so next time something comes along, they're going to be like, oh, remember when Bob Smith and Sally Stewart had their little thing and it set us back, you know, 8 hours that day and it cost $1 million. Don't
fucking hire them. Bob Smith. That damn Bob Smith.
I'm telling you. And then now Bob Smith doesn't get, and now he's doing, you know, he's doing commercials for ShamWow.
Yeah. Cool. For being a director, right? I think, you know, when people are saying, you know, you got to tend to actors' egos, you know, there is just a tad bit of truth to that, in terms of tending to egos doesn't mean you got to tell them something that will satisfy their ego. But as a director, you got to have a sense of understanding that, oh, wait a minute, I know when it is about the thing. And then I also know when it is about them, of something that I have no idea, nor am I interested, really, or am I trying to figure it out, you know. But I think your responsibility as a director and as a producer sometimes is to really find a way to kind of tell your employees or your actors that are working for you that you are understood. And you are understood, however, this is not the time and place. And when you kind of go approach in that way, where I go, you know, hey, are you okay? You know, I can see that this, you know, that the scene's getting to you, and you're limiting yourself to kind of go there. Is there any way that I can help? And then, you know, maybe they'll lose their shit, and maybe they won't. But even if they lose their shit, you kind of go, okay, well, why don't we talk about this over some margaritas at Applebee's tonight, but not now, right? Because there's a job to do. You know, there's a job to do. And, you know, being in the industry of movie making, being in the industry of imagination, the real world, and also to emulate themes of the real world. Therefore, you got to immerse yourself in those deep feelings. Sometimes it's hard to differentiate the two of when you're doing it for the job and then when you're doing it, but you're just the job and the job is you. You understand what I'm saying in terms of that difference?
I'm sorry.
Listen, where my job is creative. My job is to follow the human condition and figure out a way to express the human condition. And it can get very muddled at times, you know? So I think that when you realize that, oh, my job is to emulate and to expose the human condition, you know that your 9-to-5 is only about that, and anything that you are feeling about the world and about life, don't let it turn into an emotional outbreak that has nothing to do with our goal. And you can really kind of, as you were saying, as we were talking about it in the beginning, where you can reflect on the younger generation and you kind of get shocked of what you see, you know, like, oh man, I didn't know that was that clear. Was I that clear when I was young, you know, to the people who are older than me? It's the same thing with working with employees, even in the same sort of age group or in the same generation, where it's like, wow, we never lost our 14-year-old selves of kind of showing what we are feeling, you know, and showing, you know. And so when you have the producer and director hat on, you gotta have the goggles that takes you outside of yourself to really understand what's going on with the other person, so then you can get the job done.
And what you were saying as a director can apply just to any workplace, really, whether you're a manager or a coworker or not. You see first, you know, that your male actor and your female actor, they don't have that chemistry that they had yesterday when they were filming. So you kind of go and you say, and again, you kiss it at workplace, say, is something on your mind? Do you want to talk about it? Answer is yes. Great. Look about it. Let's hash it out. If the answer is no, well, I'm going to need you to pack it up, set it aside, get the job done, and then we can talk about it when you're ready. Because now you're wasting my time. You're wasting our money. And you're affecting the people on the set, you know. Look at the craft services lady. She's crying, you know.
Yeah. When I was, it reminded me when I first did my first big gig, which was actually like my second job, which was, it was a Nickelodeon show. And I was sorry.
What was it?
Oh, it was called The Troop. It was like a single cam action comedy about three kids who were a monster hunting troop, you know, high school kids by day and monster hunters by night, you know, Ghostbusters kind of thing for kids. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it was 28 episodes where I got to learn what it was like to be a good employee first and, you know, an actor second. And I think the thing that really got me was when one of my showrunners, who is still, you know, a friend and I consider a mentor, anytime we have the chance to speak, you know, I'll take him out for a coffee to, you know, take a piece of his brain or something, but and guidance. But he would tell me that.
Give him a shout out. Go ahead.
Jay Kogan. Hey. So I know, but I think. He would tell me, you know, okay, from this take to this take, that was, and the take would be about, I don't know, 49 seconds or something like that. It was like right there was 18 grand just spent right there from action to cut. And so it's kind of like, you know, it kind of puts a little bit in perspective there, you know, where it was the costumes work that was the lighting's work, the cameras work, the sets work, the castings work, the producers work, the foods work, the actors work, and the writers work, everything. Yeah, it was kind of sunken into that 49 second. And that really taught me to kind of go, oh, okay, I want to waste time on set talking about the scene, right? I want to waste time on set that I have a problem or I have a solution, or if they have a problem or if they have a solution of the just about the scene, about the take, about the lights, about whatever, as opposed to your own bullshit.
Right. You have to find the time and the right place for that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yeah.
And I feel like it would make you look good if they were like, well, look at David. David knows when to shut up and David knows when to speak up. You know, he's got his timing is good. He's not wasting my time. And hey, in this scene, what do you think if we did, it's like, save it for the table read, save it for after, write me a letter.
You know, if there is something I'm very good at, even to a fault, is shutting the fuck up and not speaking up enough. I leave the bravery of speaking one's mind to my wife, because she is very good at that. Maybe I'm too quiet sometimes, but I agree with you. I agree with you on that regard as well.
I'm just imagining like someone says something to you and you're like, you know what, honey?
Exactly. Let me call my wife and put her on speaker and she'll tell you a thing or two. Yeah. She'll speak for me.
Fire you up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God. Well, question. I wanted to ask you, what was your very first gig? What was your ta-da?
Well, my very first gig was an episode of Law & Order SVU. I got to do scenes with both Mariska Hargitay and Christopher Maloney, and that was pretty cool. You know, the where you kind of try to a cool sort of badge of honor when you get cast in those shows is kind of getting interrogated by both of them, and not just only one. And by the way, if it was only one, that'd be great. But to be interrogated by these two pros, it was a real lesson for me, and how the film is. I was 20 years old.
I can make my.
And I was.
That's a good sandwich. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it was. It really was, and you know, I remember when Mariska Hargitay was having a scene with somebody else on the other side of the glass, you know, while I was in the interrogation room with Christopher Maloney. And, you know, those sets aren't what you think. They're not two separate rooms. It really is just a little wall piece of, you know, a window that goes, you know, so you can really hear us if we spoke loud or even a little above a whisper, you can hear us on the other side. And I was kind of frozen. You know, I didn't know I was supposed to kind of improvise or just maybe speak water, say water mouth, watermelon, 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 that kind of thing, you know. And I remember Christopher Maloney looking at me and he goes, I like your shoes. And I said, oh, thank you. And then we started complimenting each other and talking about our day, but our action and our face and our movement was just a kid trying to defend himself and say, I didn't kill him, I didn't kill him. And Christopher Maloney was kind of like, I don't believe you, I don't believe you. But we weren't saying those words. What we were doing was, you know, Christopher Maloney was just trying to really get me comfortable in the sense of speaking truthfully, you know, but and feeling truthfully, even though we have no lines in this scene, but let's still engage with each other. And that was something that I picked up. And also, you know, we had a chase scene and he, you know, Christopher Maloney had to slam me down somewhere. And he was just a gracious pro, constantly asking me if I was okay, constantly checking in on me and all that stuff. And I would, I'm grateful for that. Cause you know, those kind of things, when you're responsible for a show's success, you know, and being a guest star too, you're a guest at someone's home basically. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's, I feel like it's kind of your job as the lead actor to be a gracious host, and both of them really, really were.
I'm just imagining him like body slamming you and then they're like, cut. And he's like, you all right, buddy? Okay, let me help you out.
It's true. It's true. That's exactly what it was. That's exactly what it was.
You know what? We didn't think about Roadhead yet. Oh my gosh.
That's happening? I don't even know.
I heard a rumor about.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I have a question. Is there a whole head in it?
Is there what? Sorry.
Well, it's called Roadhead.
Correct. So you're correct. Is there any Roadhead happening? Is that what you're asking? Yes. You got to watch the film. Got to check it out and find out for yourself. Yeah.
All right. Fine. I'm waiting. You're supposed to send me the screen. I'm gonna watch.
Oh, that's all right.
Really quick, because we're running out of time, and we had such a good conversation. We'll have to have a part two. Okay.
Sure.
Part two after I watch it, and we'll talk about, I don't know.
Cool.
Roadhead.
Yeah. Exactly.
So this is your star.
So this is my second directorial feature, and the both films I decided not to act in, only because I really wanted to exercise that muscle a bit more, and also, you know, also being an actor on a film, it's such a small part of the process, and you know, directing and producing really is the whole encompassing feel of it. And I just wanted to concentrate on those aspects. I didn't want to add any more to my plate. And plus, the actors that are in Roadhead brought such heart and perspective to their characters that I never, ever would have imagined, would have even started imagining. And so that for their commitment, I'm very, very grateful. And you know, I got to be honest too, you know, when I'm directing actors and they give a good performance, I feel like I gave a good performance, you know what I mean? And I feel like it's a part of you, you know, when you give an actor a direction and they decide to fall flat on their face in that direction and truly, truly commit, that you kind of, you know, get to a point that you feel like, oh yeah, that felt like I did it, you know, and good actors do that for you as a director, where it's like, man, you really got that idea out. Number one, as a way that I never really expected, and then making it your own, and then also on the balance, made me feel like I was a part of that. So, you know, it would, right now I haven't committed to a project that I'm going to direct myself in yet. But when that happens, you know, it's going to be, exactly. I'll call my own agent and figure out a good deal, you know, but I think it's the right time, right project. And, I don't know. I'd be very happy with directing my films without being in it. You know, I'd be very content with that, because I,
and overwhelming, honestly.
You know, it's funny. I've actually done it before in my own little films that I did in Miami when I was 14 and 15. So I know I can do it. However, I think there are just other great actors out there that can really bring something that I can't even touch. And that's why I like being on the other end of the camera.
I was trying to pull up Roadhead so we could shout out to the actors, but holy shit, you were in the Belko Experiment?
That I was. Yeah, that's my wife's good. That's my wife's favorite movie that I was in. And it was, you know, it was a big group of us in Bogota, Colombia. Yeah. And it felt like I was a new member of a family because a lot of those actors have known each other for decades.
Yeah, yes.
And so
you have Stephen Blackheart, you have, Michaela, and of course James, but that was huge, number one, and that movie is messed up.
It is messed up. And the more messed up it was, the more fun it was, for sure, too. It felt like we were in a theater troupe, you know, kind of going around and doing, you know, little theater shows and stuff. I apologize for the garbage back there. But anyway, it was really, really fun. A really great experience. I'll always be grateful for.
Where can everyone see it? Is it going to have a theatrical release? Is it video on demand, or is it virtual?
It will be released June 4th on VOD.
Okay.
Knowing where in VOD, I really have no idea, but VOD seems to be a very general sense, but it will be a video on demand June 4th across the VOD universe. June 4th
is next week, and I'm really trying
it's next
to get
Friday it. Yeah,
so Sunday I've got one, so I think I'm gonna try to get you for Tuesday's show.
Okay, cool. Great. Cool. Well, it was a really great talk. I really enjoyed the conversation. So thanks for taking the time.
Oh, absolutely. Anytime. Call me. David, it's
been all right. Well,
adios, mijo.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening, lovelies. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with David. If you did, head on over to Amazon. Check out Roadhead. I highly recommend it. Emphasis on the highly. Go on over there, show David a little bit of love. While you're at it, head on over to my wonderful partners, beunique.org. Show them some love. And you know I'm showing you all my love every day.